versus McGinnis. Again, our first case is McGinnis versus McGinnis. Counsel, if you're ready, you may approach.
Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Vacanti. I am here with my co-counsel in this case, William Finocchiaro, and we are the attorneys for Lisa McGinnis, who was the plaintiff in the dissolution case that was heard in Odo County, Nebraska. The Honorable Michael Smith was the presiding judge, and this case here today resulted from a trial that occurred in August of 2017. A decree was then entered in November of 2017. A subsequent motion to alter or amend and motion for new trial was filed. And then as a result of that, an amendment to the decree was eventually entered by Judge Smith. Ms. McGinnis has filed this appeal and has three assignments of error. And I will hit on each of those very briefly and then go back in detail. She has alleged that the business known as TLM Farms, while it's called TLM Farms, it's actually not a farming operation. It has to do with drain tiles and various trenching that Mr. McGinnis performed. It was a business he owned prior to the time of marriage, but continued with that business during the time of the marriage. Also has to deal with some farmland that Mr. McGinnis owned prior to the marriage, but allegedly the increase in value during the course of the marriage was one of the issues that we presented to the trial court judge. And then the third assignment of error relates to alimony, and that no alimony was awarded to Ms. McGinnis. As far as the first assignment of error, this is related to TLM Farms. The decree itself from Judge Smith originally said that the court finds the value of the company has not materially increased during the term of the party's marriage and confirms this asset to defendant as his non-marital property. Now, attached to that decree was a table. It was a table that we were all using to try and bring together, and so we didn't have too many different exhibits. We used this table. And Judge Smith attached the table to the decree. The table indicated that TLM Farms had equipment value at $396,000 and that it had a premarital value of $63,250. And the table indicated that the net marital value was $333,043. When the motion to alter or amend was heard, there was an amendment to the decree that was issued by Judge Smith, and that amendment went on to say the court reiterates its previous findings that the defendant and his interest in TLM Farms are non-marital assets. But here's the interesting part. It says, while income may be marital, the increase in value, which contradicts what was said earlier, was due to outside market forces and normal appreciation and not due to the active efforts of either spouse. Judge Smith says, accordingly, that increase in value is considered to be a non-marital asset. The table was then altered by Judge Smith, and the table that was attached to the amendment to the decree just indicated that TLM Farms was a premarital asset. So it seemed to be contradicting because Judge Smith adopted what he had previously said in the decree, but then went on to say that there was an increase in value of TLM Farms. But he then went on to say that that it was not due to active efforts. What was interesting about this case is the trial in this case was heard on August 30th. Stevens' case came out in mid-July, so just about 6 weeks prior. And so it did change how we all looked at the active appreciation, no longer needing to be by the spouse that owned the asset, but it was now due to the marital efforts, which meant that Mr. McGinnis, if he was working TLM Farms during the marriage and it increased in value, that would be considered the marital efforts of Mr. McGinnis, and then that translates into active appreciation. So there should have been some value assigned to the marital portion of TLM Farms, the increase in value from the time the marriage took place until the time of the dissolution.
Did the $396,000 figure and the $63,250 figure change between the decree and the amended decree?
It did, in the sense that Judge Smith removed those values from the table that was attached to the amendment to the decree. That's where those numbers were identified, and he went back and deleted that and just put in the words premarital there. And so, yes, it did change.
Had the evidence during trial indicated that while though the value of the equipment had gone from $63,250 to $396, was there any accompanying debt?
Yes.
And how much was that?
Yes, sir. So I would draw Your Honor's attention to Exhibit 55. 55 is the defendant's exhibit, and it was the defendant's proposed balance sheet. And just if we took this at face value, it showed that the net TLM assets were they were $292,000 and then $63,000 as of the time of marriage, leaving net, arguably marital assets of $228,000. If you look at Exhibit 55, further on down in that exhibit, again, defendant's exhibit, it shows the debt related to TLM Farms was $128,000 in commercial debt and then roughly $25,000 in unsecured debt. If you just take that at face value, you come up with a net increase, and this is already taking out the premarital value, the net value is $74,742. So, you know, in the scheme of things, maybe that doesn't seem like a lot of money, but that's a lot of money to Ms. McGinnis. And so clearly there was an increase in value, and by defendant's own brief, defendant acknowledges that this TLM Farms was Mr. McGinnis's primary business. I mean, he worked this full time. There's never been a question that this was his full time job. And in some years, he earned more than $500,000 in gross receipts. This is what he did.
Was the valuation based upon an asset valuation of that company?
It was. We did not have any experts. We looked at the assets themselves. And if you look back, I'll point the court to one other exhibit. Exhibit 41 is defendant's signed, it's entitled balance sheet. Basically, it looks like it was a document that was signed by Mr. McGinnis to obtain loans from Commercial State Bank. And that signed balance sheet was done in the year prior to the marriage, and it showed equipment and vehicles at $384,000 by his own admission. We also, if you look at Exhibit 33, that shows the bank balance in TLM Farms at the time we had the trial of $56,660. So if you add those two together, if we're looking at just a book value, we've got equipment and cash of $440,000.
Right. Is that balance sheet at its market value, or was it at its historical cost? Do you know?
Who
knows?
I don't know the answer to that. What I know is this. Mr. McGinnis, when he completed what appears to be a balance sheet for the bank, he put what the values were of the equipment. I don't think any of us, we realize maybe that could be inflated if you go get a loan at a bank, but if he signs it and says, this is the value of my assets, I think we have to take that at face value.
So follow-up question, so is all that equipment that you're valuing, and you're asking, is the value of that company, was that all acquired after the marriage with earnings from the business, as opposed to assets that were a part of the business prior to the marriage?
That is our position, yes.
Okay.
That is our position, yes.
So is it, I know you're running out of time, but is it your position here today that you believe if the court had done what you asked it to do, that $70,442 figure would be the figure?
Actually, Your Honor, I believe it's significantly more than that. I pointed that out because on defendant's own admission, there's an increase in value, and the defendant admits that he works this job full time. I think the number is more like $262,000.
And how are you getting there?
So I take those assets that I just mentioned, the $384,000 in equipment, that's on Exhibit 41. I take the $56,000 that's on Exhibit 33, that's the bank balance, that's $440,000. I take off Exhibit 29 and Exhibit 30, which are the credit cards and the secured debt, that's $127,000. That leaves $312,000 of value. If you look on Exhibit 4...
Council, didn't, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but didn't you say that the balance sheet 41 was that's a balance sheet for a loan prior to marriage?
It was the year prior.
A year prior. Okay,
yes, sir.
So what would the growth... I'll let you finish. What would the growth be from there, then?
Well, I'm saying at a minimum, he had all that equipment, and that was the value 1 year prior to the marriage.
Okay.
The $384,000. I took the bank balance at the time of the dissolution.
You can finish.
To get to those assets. And then I subtract, if you look at Exhibit 41, the actual net value of his business, it isn't $63,000. We keep talking about that, but it's actually $50,766. If you look at Exhibits 41, 33, 29, 30, and then 55, it really shows everything right there. So the net marital value, in my opinion, is $262,000.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How long did we take him over?
30 seconds.
Would you please add that to the appellee's time? Good morning.
Good morning, judges. My name's Catherine Putnam. I'm the attorney for the appellee, Tim McGinnis. Just to address the issue of TLM Farms, which is the conservation business. This business was not valued. Ms. McGinnis made a lot of claims about what the value was based on a depreciation schedule on his tax return, based on a loan application he filed in 2008 with his bank, and then a subsequent loan application from 2015. Mr. McGinnis testified to all of these factors and that none of them showed the actual value of his business. Ms. McGinnis, I believe, had the burden to show that the business appreciated in value after Mr. McGinnis established it was his premarital property, which he clearly did. There was no dispute on that issue. After he shows that, the burden would then shift to Ms. McGinnis to prove that it actually appreciated during the term of the marriage. She did not meet this burden. There was a lot of hypotheticals given, there's a lot of math being done, but there was no expert that was brought in to actually value this business from an asset approach, from an income approach, or from any other approach that would be understood to be an accurate assessment of a valuation of a business. Ms. McGinnis testified herself, she has no idea whether it went up in value, down in value, or stayed the same from the date of their marriage to the date of the trial. And that was her testimony. And while I appreciate that, you know, the attorneys are there to help usher through their theory of the case, the testimony wasn't there to support the exhibits that were offered. Exhibit 55 was Mr. McGinnis's exhibit, but what it established simply was what assets were acquired in the marital term and what the debts were. It had no bearing on what the actual value of any of these items were on the date of the trial, or even at the date of the party separation. So there's no rational relationship between his 2015 depreciation schedule for the business and what the value of any of these things were at the time of trial. And I don't believe that the burden was on him to show appreciation, because as the business owner, he's entitled by law to testify to his opinion as to the value of his own business, which he did extensively. He testified as to the value when he started the business, how it was in decline, both due to market issues and his own health issues, and that he did not have the work coming in that he had anticipated when he retired from his job to do this full time. And the other issue that he testified to is that he had to heavily encumber the business and his premarital farmland to just keep the equipment going, and that the cash flow just wasn't there. There's some reference exactly to a bank account of the business, which he clearly testified to was used entirely to pay taxes for that year. So it wasn't money that was sitting there as retained earnings, it was just money earmarked to pay his taxes. And that's all in the record that he testified to. And so his opinion that was that on the date of the marriage, the business was worth about $53,000, on the date of trial, about $41,000. And he reached that conclusion by, if he liquidated everything that day, sold all of his assets and any accounts receivable that he might have had. And so that was his opinion as to the value. The judge, having had watched the witnesses, observed their testimony, did find that he did not think there was a material increase in appreciation in the business during the marriage, and that is clearly reflected in the decree. I think the confusion does come in when we look at the amended decree, which kind of mushes together the farmland and the business. And I don't think the court intended to infer that they were setting aside their prior finding that the business didn't materially increase in value. I think it was just a quick way to dispose of the farm issue, and they kind of got muddled together. But there's no indication or any subsequent findings that the business materially increased in value or that there's any value assigned by the judge. He zeroed those out. They were, some values were inadvertently left on the balance sheet in the first decree, but that was remedied in the second, in the amended decree. So I don't think you can read so far into it as to say he set aside his prior findings of fact. And
is there any evidence in the record as to the equipment that was in the business at the time of valuation, when it was acquired, whether it was acquired pre-marriage versus post-marriage?
Only in terms of, the only evidence about anything is the depreciation schedule from his tax return. So that would indicate the year that any item was put into service, and then how it's being depreciated for tax purposes. There, it has a cost basis, obviously, and then a depreciation schedule. It doesn't tell you anything about the current value. And I believe that the depreciation schedule used at trial was from 2015, so it was 2 years old, maybe 2016, but it wasn't a current valuation. It wasn't, there's no expert testimony as to any of these issues. I think the confusion does come in a little bit here on burdens of proof, and it would be very helpful, I think, if we could get some direction to verify that once a asset is established as being premarital, that the burden then shifts to the non-owning spouse to show an increase in value. Then once that's shown, then the burden would shift back to the owning spouse to show whether it was active or passive.
Isn't that the current law?
I believe so, but there appears to be some confusion just after Stevens, because Stevens didn't hit that point. I think Stevens clearly established whose duty it is to prove active versus passive, but I think the burden to show the appreciation may not have been very clear in that case. So I do think that that is something that could be clarified in this case. The second issue is the farmland, which if Stevens is gonna be the benchmark for active appreciation, McGinnis's farmland can be the absolute benchmark for the passive appreciation. It's farmland he's owned for 20 years prior to the marriage. He doesn't do anything with it. His brother has a sharecropping agreement with him, so he does all the farming. Tim doesn't farm. His brother testified for quite a long time about Tim's lack of efforts in the farming operation, and he profit shares based on their ownership interests. They have never improved the land. There's no structures. They don't put any money into it. Any money that is gleaned from the sharecropping deal goes back to pay the property taxes and things like that. And so when you look at our case law, and I think Schaefer is particularly on point to this, where in that case, a farmer actively farmed his land, the wife claimed an interest, and the court said she needed to prove a causality link between the farming operation and the appreciation. And in that case, he was actively doing those things. This is not that case. So if the court couldn't find the causal link there without evidence, certainly just the fact that generally farmland has increased in the last 10 years would not be active appreciation. It couldn't get more passive than that. There was no valuations done or appraisals of any of the land in this case. She relied on the tax assessed values, which are really not an indicator of anything but what people have to pay in taxes. But if we're talking about appreciation in terms of the tax assessed value, he has no control over that. That's statutory in nature. It's based on aggregate sales throughout similar comparable properties throughout Nebraska. So he has about as much impact on that as he would on what Facebook stock traded for this morning. So when we look at passivity, this is clearly within that bucket.
Could you turn your attention to the alimony issue, please?
Yes, this was a marriage of short duration, about 7 years. The parties were separated for a significant period of time prior to trial. Mr. McGinnis was ordered to pay temporary alimony of $3,000 a month, plus maintain the mortgage and carrying costs on the home she was living in. So I do think that the court made a very large temporary order that was outsized for their actual incomes. Mr. McGinnis is retired. The only income he has is from his pension and from what money he's able to get from the TLM Farms business. He did, the evidence did show he took out very large early distributions from his retirement account, which he was heavily penalized for just to keep things afloat, to get her paid, to keep the mortgages going, to keep the business going. So in terms of income, he doesn't have a lot of extra income to have paid alimony to in the temporary order. I think he was able to testify what a hardship that was, and that she's able to work. She was working at the time of the entry of, or at the time of trial, and there was no indication that she met the statutory criteria for an alimony award, especially if a marriage this short.
What about her health issues?
There was some testimony about it. Again, there was no expert that testified. All of the issues she explained that she was experiencing were old, 20 years before, 10 years before, nothing current that had happened. She was able to work up until 2015 without issue, and then suddenly when the marriage started to deteriorate is when she stopped working. And so I don't think the evidence there was to support a finding that she was unable to work. She herself testified that with some accommodations for sitting and seats that she would be able to maintain full-time employment, and at the time of trial she was. So there was no evidence that her health issues either before marriage or at the time of trial would have anyway impacted her ability to work.
Anything further?
No. Anything else?
All right. Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much. I know we took the appellant over time, so there's no time for rebuttal. Thank you for being here. We will take the case under advisement. Thank you very much.
Thank you.